You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
Step by step along this march, Candy One, Candy One. Many stones can form an arch, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions and is sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Construction and General Laborers Local 1290 and Teamsters Joint Council 56. Construction and General Laborers Local 1290 represents over 2,300 men and women in the construction industry throughout Kansas and western Missouri. And Teamsters Joint Council 56, oh my gosh, they're missing their statement. Well, they represent the Teamster locals in Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, and are generous and donors to the Heartland Labor Forum. We thank our underwriters for their contributions to the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI. On tonight's show, on May Day 2017, workers filled the streets all over the world celebrating International Workers' Day and protesting against repression of unions and, in the U.S., Trump policies, especially against immigrants. Here in Missouri, no one was surprised by the protests of workers and immigrants in Kansas City and St. Louis, but there was even one in Kirksville called the Unified May Day. It brought together immigrant workers from the Smithfield Pork Plant in Milan and Kirksville citizens and students. On tonight's show, we will have much of the activities that occurred in Kirksville on May Day. In the news, injured workers in Honduras fight back against Delta Apparel, and exposed Walmart tour comes to Kansas City. Our feature at the end of the show is Washington Window on Workers with Mark Grunberg. And now for the news.
This is the news from our side, May 25th, 2017. The Atlantic reports that the House passed Republican health care bill would leave 23 million more people uninsured over a decade and could dramatically increase costs for people with pre-existing conditions in many states. The Congressional Budget Office projected a highly anticipated analysis realized Wednesday afternoon. The new report is likely to exacerbate the political backlash against Republicans who voted for the party's replacement for the Affordable Care Act without an updated estimate of its impact. It will also factor heavily into the deliberations on health care in the Senate, where Republicans decided to start from scratch rather than to fix an unpopular House bill that many of them consider deeply flawed. The top line numbers in the report from the nonpartisan congressional scorekeeper changed little from an earlier version of the American Health Care Act, which the CBO said would have resulted in 24 million fewer people having insurance after a decade and an initial increase in the cost of coverage premiums. But that analysis did not account for several significant changes Republicans made to the bill in order to secure more votes, including amendments that weaken federal protections for people with pre-existing conditions. Once the GOP leadership locked in the 216 votes it needed for a majority, Speaker Paul Ryan did not want to risk losing support while waiting for a new CBO score, a highly unusual move for such a far-reaching law and one that would draw condemnation from Democrats and independent policy analysts.
When Delta Apparel fired 40 workers who suffer from crippling musculoskeletal injuries from their factory in Villanueva, Cortez, Honduras, In early April, many people sent protest letters to Delta demanding that they be reinstated according to Honduran law. Delta heard them and agreed last week to reinstate them, but with conditions that are against the law. 25 of the workers, 22 women and 3 men, had decided to fight for their jobs and asked CODEMU, the Honduran Women's Collective, for help. CODEMU launched an international campaign to pressure Delta and the Honduran Ministry of Labor. Delta agreed to negotiate the conflict with the workers' union, but only in the presence of representatives of the Honduran Maquiladora Association. This is like having the Chamber of Commerce sitting in on bargaining. The workers were barred from negotiations, and so was CODEMU. The workers were happy to win reinstatement, but the conditions their union agreed to are unacceptable. Almost all fired workers are disabled because of massive repetitive strain injuries. They went through a long and costly process of being certified as disabled by the government Social Security Institute, and each was issued a medical diagnosis which prescribes what kind of work they are allowed to do without worsening their injuries. The law mandates that they not be fired because of their illnesses. Instead, they are to be moved to safe work. However, the company and the Maquila Association pressured their weak union to agree that they have to go through recertification of their disabilities. Meanwhile, they go back to the assembly line jobs, which only exacerbate their injuries. Also, an ergonomic study is to be done, but by the Maquila Employer Association with no worker input. CODEMU and the workers have asked people to please write to Delta Apparel and the Honduras Secretary of Labor, asking that they respect the workers' demands along with their reinstatement. For a copy of the alert, go to Cross Border Network on Facebook later tonight.
The 2017 Expose Walmart Tour is a 22-state, 30-plus city cross-country tour that will expose the many real stories of Walmart's low wages, poor benefits, taxpayer-subsidized costs, and other negative community impacts. The tour kicks off in Phoenix, Arizona on May 15th and ends at Walmart's annual shareholder meeting in Fayetteville, Arkansas on June 2nd. The tour will feature American workers, Walmart employees, community groups, elected officials, and leaders coming together to propose real solutions to the Walmartization that is hurting our economy, costing taxpayers, and destroying our jobs. The tour is being coordinated by Interfaith Worker Justice and the United Food and Commercial Workers. They will be in Kansas City this Saturday at 9 a.m. in front of City Hall in downtown KCMO.
And this from Diane Stafford at the Kansas City Star. On the theory that trends move in from the coasts, a law that went into effect May 15th in New York City needs national notice. The city's new Freelance Isn't Free Act addresses no pay and slow pay problems for freelancers in the growing gig economy. It's believed to be the country's first such law. An estimated 4 million workers in New York City, and perhaps 55 million nationally, do freelance work, which means they're not operating the traditional employer-employee relationship. They often don't have pay protections provided by the Fair Labor Standards Act or even have written contracts. The new law applies to freelancers in New York City and to those who hire them, no matter where the hirer is based. It provides for the right to a written contract when the work is valued at $800 or more, and the right to be paid in full by the date specified in the contract or within 30 days of the work being completed. The measure excludes medical professionals, lawyers, and sales representatives from coverage, but it embraces a range of workers such as those who do home contracting and repair, web design, film, video, photography, and graphic arts, media relations, and translation services. It's a start, Julie Cortez, founder of the Kansas City Freelance Exchange, said of the New York City law. The pay problems are definitely prevalent. Given the evolution in work, it's possible that one-third of U.S. workers could benefit from the kind of pay protection afforded by the New York City law, depending on whether other cities or states pass similar measures. A survey by the Freelancers Union, leading up to passage of the New York City law, found that nearly three-fourths of freelancers surveyed said that they had problems getting paid, and some were completely stiffed, with no real recourse other than pursuing a lawsuit that likely would cost more than the amount they weren't paid. The news tonight was read by Molly Madden, Greg Swartz, Judy Ansel, and I'm Jen Zaman.
When I was 10 years old, my family took me on a ferry ride. As we docked on Ellis Island, a sign was welcoming me. I never will forget the moment standing side by side as we gazed at the names of our ancestors who came across the sea. There was Jacob and Luke, Sadie came too, and Elsie got through to America. They came husband and wife, escaping from strife to create a new life in America.
And that was Bev Grant with America. And this is Judy Ansel. May Day is International Workers' Day around the world, and even here in the U.S., where it originated in 1886 with the struggle for the eight-hour day and the tragedy of the Haymarket bombing and executions. But May Day was suppressed in this country because it was associated with labor radicalism. One of the benefits of the surge of immigration in recent times is that immigrants brought May Day with them and gave it back to us. In 2006, on the heels of the introduction of a draconian anti-immigrant bill in Congress, tens of thousands of immigrants picked May Day to protest. Their marches were some of the largest in U.S. history, and they stopped the bill. This year, on May Day, in Kansas City, Stand Up KC had a big demonstration and marched to City Hall, which was a big success. But I heard of another more improbable May Day celebration, and our volunteer Michael Savoir and I decided to go to Northeast Missouri, to Milan and Kirksville, for their joint celebration. Milan is the home of a Smithfield pork slaughter and processing plant, which began its as premium standard foods, then morphed to farmland, then to JVS, and finally Smithfield, which in 2013 was purchased by Hong Kong-based Shuanghui International Holdings. It's the world's largest pork producer and hog producer. Now, much of its production goes to the millions of pork lovers in Asia. Smithfield has 52,000 employees, mostly in the U.S., Midwest, and in North Carolina. They have 8 plants in Poland, 2 in Romania, and 2 in Mexico. One is the alleged source of the swine flu. Its largest plant in Tar Hill, North Carolina, made the company a notorious union buster. It took 14 years and 3 elections to win a union. However, 3/4 of Smithfield workers all over the world have union representation today, and Smithfield lists labor relations problems as well as immigration enforcement as 2 significant risks in its annual 10K report. The Smithfield plant in Milan, Missouri is non-union, so we were thrilled when Axel Fuentes, the executive director of the Rural Community Workers Alliance in Milan, told us that the workers wanted to go on strike for May Day. We drove up to Milan that morning and began our day with Axel and 2 members of the Rural Community Workers Alliance board, Carlos Rich, who had driven in the day before from Manhattan, Kansas, and Rolf Christian, a local farmer and Swiss immigrant who once sued a predecessor owner of the Milan plant for the ghastly environmental damage done by the waste from their 134 Missouri hog farms. For full disclosure, I'm also a member of the board of the RCWA. Of course, I interviewed Axel, Carlos, and Rolf over a lunch at a local Mexican restaurant. The evening before, there was a rally in Milan with the workers and supporters, and I asked Axel what role the RCWA played in organizing. By the way, Axel has lived in Milan for about 10 years. Originally, he's from Guatemala.
Well, the role of Rural Community Workers Alliance has been just to listen to the workers and them assist them in whatever their needs and concerns are in their communities and workplaces. So workers start to express their desire of striking for May Day just because they think about some workers' conditions are not right, and also because the situation in this nation. So that's how pretty much everything start, you know, how we start the talks, and then we move it forward to find out avenues to make this possible. And we did a rally yesterday.
Okay, so before we get to that, these workers work for what company, and how many of them are immigrants?
Most of the workers in Milan works for Smithfield, and Smithfield is employing over 1,000 workers. We'll say probably 1,200 or 1,100. I don't know exactly the number. And most of the workers in that company are immigrants from Central America, Mexico, and Africans.
And Smithfield, do you know how many hogs they slaughter a day?
In 8-hour period, they are killing 10,500 hogs.
Okay, just for comparison, I think the Triumph plant in St. Joseph, Missouri slaughters 19,000 a day.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's about half that size. But it's the biggest game around here, right, in terms of factory employment?
Yeah. Yes. It's the biggest employer in the whole area here in these counties.
And they have lots of feeder farms, right, that produce the hogs. You have anything that you want to say about that, Rolf?
Correct. The company raises about 3 million hogs in 3 or 4 counties up here in North Missouri. So they pretty much raise their whole production is being raised in 3 or 4 counties right around the slaughter plant here.
And this is industrial farms where everything is prescribed, correct?
Correct. Basically, these animals are housed in buildings, and basically these animals never see daylight. These animals are born in aluminum crates, and then they just eat and drink and eat and drink, and then they get butchered.
And you know you're passing one of these on the highway because your nose tells you, right?
Absolutely. And where we live, I mean, you know, although we've been in litigation with PSF for many, many years, I mean, the odor is just uncontrollable, and I mean, it stinks terribly. It stinks like hell.
The workers wanted to do something for May Day, and what happened?
Yeah, we start to look for kind of legal help to make sure that we could have workers protected by striking on May 1st. Unfortunately, it was a little late for us to develop a campaign, and obviously were some evidences already that they were going to strike for a May Day as a political day. So they we found out.
Wait a minute, what does that mean, to strike for May Day as a political day?
That means it's not work related. I mean,
but why did they want to strike? What did they say to you? What did the workers say to you about May Day and why it was important for them to walk out?
Basically, for what's going on in the separation of families with immigration, and to recognize that immigrants are a very important piece of the economy of this country, and they want to support the call that is in the whole nation to strike for that day.
Okay.
And And also on the basis that May Day, I mean, traditionally is the day for the unions to walk, and I mean, for demonstrations. I mean, all over Europe today is a big holiday, and the unions are marching, and the workers are out in the streets, and the workers are, you know, it's, I mean, it's kind of a fighting day, you know. I mean, in Russia, there used to be big demonstrations on May 1. I mean, big, okay? So, I mean, it's a workers' day. And interestingly, in this country, the United States, it is not. It's not even recognized. But I think in Mexico, it is.
Oh, it's a holiday in Mexico.
It's a holiday. That's what I'm
everywhere
saying.
In Latin America, it's a holiday.
That's what I'm saying. So I mean, I that was the reason, I think, why May Day came up. You know, I mean, it did not come up from our U.S. culture. It came up from the Hispanic culture that they said, you know, there's a day, and traditionally we've been doing something, and we want to do something here.
So what happened then when the workers wanted to walk out, but they couldn't? What happened?
So what happens is the company start to display in their screens that they are going to be enforcing their policies and issuing negative points to the workers who will not attend to work May Day, and then they offer them to have a free meal, free lunch that day.
Wow. And tell us, what was the lunch going to be, Ralph?
You got a hamburger and french fries.
A free lunch, okay, instead of the day off. And did they offer them anything else?
Nope, that was pretty much what they offer. And then they offer that if you do not attend to work, you are going to get punished with a negative point, which means if you get a negative point, you cannot collect your bonuses.
Oh, this plant works on some kind of incentive system for attendance, is that right?
Yes, they issue negative points when you do not attend to work, and then you either can get terminated if you accumulate a certain number of points in a certain period of time, and you also cannot get your bonuses if you have negative points on your record. But anyways, many of the workers were still willing to do it, and they are actually doing. And we decided yesterday to do a rally in Milan. But you know, there is something important also, that there are not only immigrants coming together in this, because there are a lot of locals. In our rally yesterday, we had a lot of support of local people and also from the surrounding communities. So this is something that is not only involving immigrants coming together. So a lot of local folks are actually also coming together, because they are not satisfied and they are not happy with what's going on in the country. They are not happy with separating families, or they do not agree that a person gotta be working on fear day to day in order to feed their families.
Okay, let me ask you, Carlos, how do you see this issue?
What I think about this day and what it means, I made the trip because I think being in solidarity with all people in this day that go in and every day, and they put in their time, and then in some instances, in some places, and because we live in this kind of really very politicized times, and they're using immigrants and refugees as scapegoating for political purpose, and I think I want to stand in the side of immigrants and refugees, because I think I myself am an immigrant from Guatemala, and I feel like everybody should have what we call the American dream, and it seems like it's every year, and especially now, it seems like it's harder and harder to make that a reality, and for many people, it becomes a nightmare, and we have to stand together and confront those negative things that are in the news and the media, so yeah.
So what's going to happen today?
Today is going to be a caravan on support of immigrants and refugees of Northeast Missouri. The caravan is going to start in Milan, Missouri, at 4 p.m. going to Kirksville. And also in Kirksville, Truman State University is holding events, and also are going to be marching from the campus to the main square in Kirksville, where Kirksville is actually going to be holding a rally also in the main square of Kirksville.
That was Axel Fuentes, Carlos Rich, and Rolf Christian of the Rural Community Workers Alliance in Milan. Later on, we asked one of the workers, Angel Osorio, why he was one of the workers who pushed for a May Day strike. I've translated what he said. He said, "It's important to me to take May Day off because I'm an immigrant, because I have a family, and the majority of immigrants and I want to bring my parents to the United States. That's one of my reasons. I want immigration reform, if it's possible, and also that they stop the deportations. It pains me that my family is separated. I've seen news stories about children left here without their parents. I don't like that." That was a quote from Angel Osorio. After Milan, we headed for Kirksville to Truman State University and the teach-in there. We found a class taught by Bonnie Mitchell, who had brought in guest speakers to talk about activism and immigration. One of them was Ethan Hughes from La Plata, Missouri. Mother Earth News says this of Ethan Hughes. "The Hughes family lives by candlelight at night because their 80-acre homestead is electricity and petroleum free. They and other inhabitants of the Possibility Alliance use an outhouse, grow their own food, and choose to live well under the poverty line at less than $3,000 a year. Yet founder Ethan Hughes says he feels that they live like kings and queens. The Alliance hosts a diverse array of 1,200 annual visitors to the site. On any given day, you could meet a West Coast band, a Christian youth group, a crew of atheist activists, or a middle-aged mom searching for inspiration. In a nutshell, the Possibility Alliance is an educational homestead practicing simplicity, self-reliance, service, and gratitude. The Possibility Alliance is also the headquarters for the Superheroes, a network of over 500 members who dress up like superheroes with nicknames such as Love Ninja and Atomic Calm, and bike across the country, stopping wherever possible to give service to anyone in need. The Superheroes have served in several states. They assisted during the Hurricane Katrina disaster. Hughes came to Truman State to participate in the teach-in, and here's just a small taste of what he had to say.
"Well, one thing that's really important is all of these changes after the Civil Rights Movement, after the huge labor strikes in LA in 2006, the Latino uprising, on a macro scale, economics have never changed. The economic haves and have-nots remain happening. And so I think the economic realities come into immigration that this two stories, this two-faced America that wants to say, why are all these people into the country, but then having them in jobs, talking to people yesterday in Milan, where you are a pregnant mom, and if you take a bathroom break, you get a strike against you, and five strikes, and you're unemployed, and you have a family. Where somebody gets injured on the work site and gets no work comp because there's other immigrants waiting to take that position. You can be paid, not paid overtime. You can be in dangerous working conditions. So white America predominantly is making billions of dollars from taking advantage of this situation of economic superiority. And so it's this two-face that we, you'll see the rhetoric of our administration, and it continued. There's a lot of deportations happening under, it's happened, all I'm saying, the economics has not changed no matter who's president. And so we have to start looking at these realities that we have to either, we're on stolen land right now. Genocide is why we're here. And all of our wealth came from 12 million Africans being kidnapped from their continent and brought here. That's where our white wealth comes from. And it's important to start to not feel guilty about it, but heartbroken about it. We're here because of genocide and kidnapping. We're here. Now what? Now what does that mean? So I think immigration and all these issues reflect a huge economic reality that we have to start really imagining a reformed nation and civilization to take on these problems. So I want to, running in immigration and then kind of the histories, I want to hand it over to Anton, and then we'll come come back to ways to ignite your passion towards social change so it's both meaningful and you wake up more excited and alive by doing it. Imagine that if we were back at a time of segregation, that we would have been active, or back at a certain time in history, the moral correct decision would have been easy. A lot of modern white liberal people would say, I would never have had a slave. But when we look at accounts of people talking at that time, for example, they're like, well, we take good care of them, and I got to be a doctor, and they grow food, and I got to feed our family. Well, we're in a similar situation right now in this moment, just taking immigration. In this community right now, in northern Missouri, both Congolese refugees and immigrants and from Mexico and Central America, here in Milan and Kirksville, there are families who aren't leaving their home because they're being yelled at. Women and children are being yelled at in the streets, being told to go home. There are trucks with Confederate flags and "Don't Tread on Me" driving at night, revving their engines by some of these homes where the families are sleeping in their basements because they're afraid. It's not an exaggeration. We just, in Iowa, two Indian immigrants were killed, and another man was shot washing his car. That this kind of violence is escalating because our leadership is telling us to hate. Just an opportunity today, there's going to be a keynote speaker. Axel Fuentes will be speaking at the courthouse. So after this class, encouraging you to join at the quad and march down to the courthouse just to be in solidarity, just to know that everyone from Mexico and Central America and over five African countries, that you're showing up saying, I'm actually standing up against this hatred and fear. And that's it's an important beginning step just to show up. And then when we show up, we get heartbroken because we start listening to the stories and then we take more action. So I want to...
Join me, Rick Stacy, on tonight's local showcase featuring Talking to Myself to You with a cast of thousands, well, really four, Jerry McMullen, Julia Jackson, Teresa Zirkel, and Greg McCarty. 8 o'clock Thursday night. Don't miss it. We'll save you a seat.
PeaceWorks is holding its annual Memorial Day Walk, Ride, Die In, 8 a.m. at the entry to the old weapons plant, Bannister Road, east of Troost, 11 a.m. at Prospect and Missouri Highway 150, 12 noon at Highway 150 and Botts Road at the new weapons plant. All are welcome. For more info, see PeaceWorksKC.org. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome back to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Judy Ansel, and we're talking tonight about May Day in Milan, Missouri and Kirksville, Missouri for the Unified Celebration, bringing together citizens, students, and workers. After the teach-in at Truman State, a ragtag group of students marched to a co-op restaurant in downtown Kirksville, where we converged with local citizens and the caravan from Milan. It was too cold and windy to be outside, and there was lots of food inside the restaurant, and everybody piled in. There were probably 200 people. Here's the welcoming speech by Axel Fuentes, followed by the mayor of Kirksville and then the chief of police.
Celebrate and recognize the contribution of immigrants and all working people in Northeast Missouri. Contribuciones de inmigrantes y trabajadores en el noreste de Missouri. Sean todos bienvenidos. So please welcome to this event. We are here to stand together to build better and safer communities for all, regardless of race, color of skin, gender, or religion. Whether We have been here 5 centuries or 5 weeks in Northeast Missouri. Estamos aquí unificados hoy para celebrar y estar todos unidos, perdón, para poder celebrar y reconocer las contribuciones de todos los inmigrantes en Northeast Missouri, sin importar su raza, color de piel, su género, religión o creencias. That's because Northeast Missouri can and will be a welcoming community for all, because diversity makes us stronger. Missouri is a community of immigrants, and we are celebrating that today. Porque el noreste de Missouri puede ser y será una comunidad que le da la bienvenida a todos. Porque la diversidad nos hace más fuertes. Y sin importar si hemos estado aquí por 5 siglos o 5 semanas, todos somos inmigrantes y estamos aquí para celebrarlo el día de hoy. Así que, bienvenidos todos. Y espero que disfruten de este evento. So welcome everyone and please enjoy this event. And it's my pleasure to introduce the mayor of Kirksville, Phil
Beston.
Beston. Sorry. Es un placer para mí presentarles al alcalde de Kirksville, al señor Phil Beston. Thank you.
This is kind of a neat thing for me because I don't know if a lot of you know, my wife is an immigrant. Well, this is kind of neat for me. My wife immigrated to Kirksville about 15 years ago, so it means a lot to me. This is a proclamation that the City Council had adopted on our April 17th meeting this year. Whereas the City of Kirksville is committed to inclusion as a fundamental aspect of our community, and cities and towns are the best place to make inclusiveness an everyday priority. And local elected officials can and should lead the way forward in making inclusiveness a priority of America's cities and towns. And the National League of Cities has designed the Partnership for Working Towards Inclusive Communities to support cities and towns in their communities to inclusion. And whereas the City of Kirksville believes that inclusive promotes equal opportunity, fairness, citizen participation, and engagement. Now therefore be it resolved that the City of Kirksville hereby affirms our commitment to inclusion as a fundamental aspect of our community and urges all citizens of Kirksville to join together and support this effort.
The City of Kirksville supports our immigrant community, and it means a lot that you were here, Mayor Beston. Thanks very much. Hey, we have another guest joining us, and they have somewhere else to be in like 5 minutes, right? So our other guy that's joining us for the moment, the police chief and also interim fire chief, Jim Hughes. Jim has a couple words to say. Would you like to speak?
First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to have me here tonight and just explain who I am and maybe some of the thoughts that I have as a police chief. Before we get started, though, I just had to hang up on my daughter. So I'm going to take a picture to prove that I was otherwise engaged. All right, so everybody smile. All right, we'll see if that one works for her. All right, it's not going to take long for me tonight because we do have someplace else to go, but quite honestly, I'm not going to talk about politics. What I'm going to talk about is I'm going to talk about what is right. right? There's a concept about what is being right. Now, I've been a police officer for a little over 39 years. During that time, I've discovered that there are certain segments of the population that seem to get victimized more than other parts of society. And one of those, there's a lot of different areas, but one of those that I see as being victimized more than they should be is the area of those who immigrate into this country. They are more often victimized than the people who grew up in this country. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. Actually, three that I'll just talk about very briefly. There is a misunderstanding about what law enforcement will do if an immigrant calls us. And that's one of the things I'm very fortunate that you allowed me to be here tonight. Let me explain that a little bit. The second thing is, sometimes if you want to report, you might not know how to do that. So maybe we can work on that a little bit tonight. And then sometimes, the third point is, no matter where you come from, everybody's system of government and law enforcement is different. Ours is different than other countries, and you may have had bad experiences in your homeland. And so that causes some issues with people coming forward to us. What I want to make sure that you understand is, I want you to understand that our job is all about the victims. Police officers love to arrest bad guys. They do not arrest victims. Let me repeat that. We do not arrest victims. Now, the bad guys that we deal with, the ones we really like to address, are what I call bullies. And bullies are people who pick on others because they know they can't fight back, or they know that they will not report to law enforcement. And that's the issue that we have with outreach to immigrant communities, is let them know that they are a victim. They are a victim. It doesn't matter whether they're born in this country. It doesn't matter. As it was just said when we started, whether you've been here 5 weeks, you've been here for five generations. It doesn't matter. If you're a victim, you're a victim. So one of the things I want to do is I want to urge everybody out there, those that are here and those that may not be here, you can get that information to them. If you become a victim of some type of a crime or somebody is taking advantage of you, especially if that is occurring because of your immigration status, please give us a call. If you don't want to give us a call, give somebody else a call. Because it's very important that we know what's going on in this community. Because if we don't know about it, we can't help. And that is one of the things that we want to do, is we want to help. So, one of the last things I want to leave you with is, remember that a victim is a victim, and it doesn't matter where you came from. I also want to let everybody know that we try to do as much outreach in the community as we possibly can. If anybody has any groups that they would like us to come talk to, or you would like to come down and just talk to me about some things that are happening with you, your family, your friends, whether it's in this community or somewhere else, I'd be more than happy to talk with you. I'd also be more than happy to go out and talk to any groups that would happen to want to have us come out and talk to. I think it's very important that we get to know each other as people and not as coming from one area and not being employed in one other area, like being a police officer. So anyway, if you have any questions, get with me at the Kirksville Police Department. The organizers will tell you how to get in touch with me. And again, I just want to reinforce, this is a fabulous opportunity. This is a fabulous get-together, and I want to thank you very much for affording me the opportunity to be here and just explain a little bit about how police officers truly think about things. Thank you very much.
Wow. That was the chief of police of Kirksville, Missouri. Before him was the mayor, and before him was Axel Fuentes, who is from the Rural Community Workers Alliance in Milan. Axel was the chief organizer of the Unified May Day 2017, which brought together immigrant workers from the Smithfield Pork Plant in Milan with citizens and students from Truman State. What a great community. There was a slam poetry by Ella and Kate from Slam Stories at Truman State. We'll play one of their poems.
Hi. For those who have never experienced slam poetry before, you are allowed to scream, snap, spit, whatever, during a poem. It is not a polite endeavor. If you disagree with me, you may yell boo. If you agree with me, you may scream at the top of your lungs. I do not care. Audience participation is important. All right, here we go. And to the Republic, for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Unless you're not white, or you don't speak English, or you weren't born in this country, or you were born here but as the smuggled embodiment of the dream of a better life. The American dream belongs to those who will never achieve it. People are incarcerated for being alive, imprisoned by stars and bars that promise them freedom. How can someone in America be free if this country was founded on structural prejudices? The first century and a half of immigrants built on baseless beliefs, compartmentalized people by the way they looked, spoke, and prayed, and then turned and burned the bridges behind them. I once had a history teacher who explained to his students that the United States was never a melting pot. Rather, it was a mixed salad, tossed between two shores, two mountain ranges forming a shallow bowl of undesirable vegetables. It feels like God is just playing with his food. But why is it, if we are indivisible, the pale, flaky croutons always end up on top? We try to give it names, racism, sexism, classism, but it's the schisms of isms that separate our colors from prisms. Defining this phenomenon won't fix anything. A diagnosis does not cure the patient. That flag does not condense us into a single United States. The official color of liberty is anything the sun illuminates. The official language of justice is any word outspoken that demands fairness for everyone. So when I place my hand on my heart, I pledge my allegiance to the new American dream, where we will tear down the walls we boxed ourselves in, look deeper and further than this shallow bowl, and to our humanity for which we'll stand, one, indivisible, all.
That was Slam Stories. We're going to end our story from the Unified May Day 2017, bringing together Milan and Kirksville immigrants and citizens with the hopes of one of the workers at Smithfield. Her name is Evelia Osorio. She was born in California, grew up in Mexico, and came to Milan 13 years ago. She's worked in the plant for 3 years, took off to have a baby, and came back 6 years ago. For her 9 years, she has repetitive strain injuries in her hands and arms, and because the workers aren't allowed time to go to the bathroom, except at infrequent breaks, she's had to have surgery on her bladder and came back to work with restrictions requiring her to get more frequent breaks, but management ignores them. The lack of bathroom breaks is a problem that is rampant in meatpacking plants in the U.S. I asked her what she wants most to improve in her work at Smithfield, and this is what she replied. I'll let her speak first in Spanish and then come in with the translation.
Me gustaría que en la planta nos trataran como personas con dignidad, que nosotros nos reunimos unas más de 100 personas con firmas y nos rechazaron, nos trataron como...
I'd like it if management treated us as humans with dignity. We had a meeting of over 100 workers. We signed a petition and they rejected us. They treated us as if we were hungry and gave us a free lunch. We are people who come to work and we need them to treat us with dignity. When we sign a petition, that they pay attention to it. The boss came to us and asked us, please, to work a Sunday, and we worked it. We didn't deny his petition to us, but when we made a petition to him, he treated us like we had no right to be heard. We don't have the right to that, but we're human beings, equal to them. And I'd like it if all who are in management above us treat us like people. We're not animals. We're not less than them. It's just that we don't have as much education as they have. I've noticed that those with white hats who are up in the offices, when they come down, they act like they're better than us. They look at us and can't even say good morning. They look at us as if we are in the times of slavery. Work, work. They're only missing the whip. That's what I want. I want them to treat us with dignity. And thanks to all the people willing to be interviewed, the teachers, the workers, and the board members of the Rural Community Workers Alliance. For more information about meatpacking workers, go to the Food Chain Workers webpage. I'm Judy Ansel. And this is Washington Window on Workers. And with us on the line from Washington, D.C. is Mark Grunberg. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
I'm fine, Judy. How are you?
I'm pretty good. But you had this rather disturbing story in this week's news about the Trump budget. You know, I guess there's a lot we can say about it. Tell us what the worst cuts are.
The worst cuts are EPA... 31%. You know, back to the days, and cutting workers as well. The workforce would be cut by about a quarter. We'd go back to the days of smog and the burning Lake Erie and things like that.
Wonderful.
Wonderful, huh? It's the other worst cuts are in the interior department, where Trump wants to roll back protections for our natural preserves and wildernesses and things like that, and also for let's face it, there's an 18% cut in a small agency called the National Labor Relations Board. That's an 18% cut in staff, and that would really gum up the works trying to manage the labor and management issues around the country.
Wow.
It's small, but it's important in so many words.
There's also the Medicaid cuts, right?
Yes, And then the Medicaid cuts and indeed the health care cuts in general probably dwarf all of these. The Medicaid cuts would be so huge that millions of people would be thrown off of health insurance rolls. The latest estimate that came out this morning was 23 million people, 13 million thrown off of Medicaid, 10 million thrown off of other insurance, and that's not counting those who, under the Republicans' health care bill, the one that passed the House earlier this month, would see their premiums skyrocket so much that they wouldn't be able to afford health insurance.
Right.
I mean, your next-door neighbor, you know, who's 65 and ill, he or she wouldn't be able to get insurance.
I want to read this quote from Chris Shelton, the president of the Communications Workers, because I think it sums it up pretty well. He says, Trump's budget is the most significant betrayal yet of the working people he claims to support. Oh, that's a quote from Trump, Richard Trumka. I'm sorry. This budget is a blueprint for how to rig the rules of the economy to favor the wealthy and corporations while taking away our freedoms and protections at work. And you list a number of cuts that I wasn't even aware of. One of them was the cuts to government employees, members of the American Federation of Government Employees. They're going to get a 6% pay cut?
Yeah, they would get a 6% pay cut in the form of that they'd have to give even more to pay for their pensions. This was several years ago, and this was under Obama. They underwent a freeze, and then, of course, they underwent also this sequestration, which cut money. And force them to give more to pay for their pensions with no prospect of getting anything back. Let's make that very clear. Congress said, okay, you're going to pay more for your pension. You're not getting anything back when you retire. Mm-hmm. You're not getting anything more back when you retire, to be precise. This is the same drill all over again.
Oh, I think the same thing happened to my fellow employees at the University of Missouri. What do you know? Maybe Trump is watching them or copying them. There's also major cuts to education. Can you go into some of that?
Well, let's put it this way. If you have a kid who's in work study, no more work study program if Trump's budget goes through. If you have a student on student loans, the student loan percentage is going to go up, and if you were planning to go into public service, like government or police or fire or something like that, where you get student loan forgiveness, forget that. And finally, for the elementary kids, you know, the K-12, they're diverting money, $400 million, or they want to divert $400 million from kids in public schools to vouchers for parents of children in private schools, most of which are religious schools.
Okay, so, and we're just about out of time, but I want to add the icing on the cake, which was brought out in the article from the president of Actors Equity, who said that they're going to be eliminating the National Endowment for the Arts.
Endowment for the Arts and the Endowment for the Humanities. If there's a theater troupe in, and I'm sure there is, in Greater Kansas City that depends on NEH funds to put on some interesting plays, they can forget it.
So,
in so many words.
So it's not just poor people who are going to be impacted really badly by
right.
this budget. It's all working people
right.
That's the betrayal, right?
Yes, right, right. And indeed, of most of the working people who will be impacted, interestingly enough, are those in states that voted for Trump. Yes.
What irony.
Like Missouri and Kansas.
Right.
So.
We're out of time, Mark. Thanks so much. Talk to you next month.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
And this is the Heartland Labor Forum calendar for May 25th, 2016. Expose Walmart Tour comes to KC Saturday, May 27th at 9 a.m. in front of City Hall, downtown KCMO. Midwest School for Women Workers, Sunday, July 16th, Thursday, July 20th. Oh, I guess it's from there. Madison, Wisconsin. For a brochure, go to MidwestWomenWorkers.org. Jobs with Justice Organizing Committee. That's on Tuesday, June 6th at 6:30 p.m. All Souls UU Church, 4501 Walnut, KCMO. And go to HeartlandLaborForum.org, where you can also listen to today's show.
And find our calendar and our upcoming shows as well. And next week, the show is called New York College for Some and How Anti-Hunger Programs Are Constrained by Their Funders. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman. You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.